when the most important player in the history of your league still isn't signed to a contract. It's not so MLS. A North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello, hello, hello.
Nick, haven't you heard about the amazing news that Lionel Messi is joining MLS?
No, I hadn't heard that. the news story that seemingly broke years ago and has slowly crept forward was finally, interestingly, announced by the player, which seemed to sort of catch both Inter Miami and the league somewhat off guard because no ink has really hit paper yet. But we at least have learned that in principle, Messi is coming to Inter Miami.
Theoretically. He has decided that that's where his path is going to take him.
And all it took was a percentage of the apple cart to make it happen. I honestly just did not think it was going to happen. Maybe I hadn't read the rumors as closely as I should have. But I forgot a really key piece, and the detail sort of came out a little bit after the initial wave of news, is that part of the deal is a percentage of Apple subscriber profits. And I was like, well, that'll do. Once you get the Apple money coming in.
And is Apple doing that well with this?
Well, so not to detract too much from the news story here, I actually read a couple of things about this today, and I couldn't find, obviously Apple doesn't release a lot of information about its subscribers, but there was some feeling or rumors that they had not had the uptick in subscriptions that they'd hoped for. And so I kind of, with that in mind, if that's true, actually see this as Apple helping make this deal happen might be a sign of things to come. Because, I mean, in terms of wanting to have a big splashy event that gets you some more subscribers, it's hard to imagine a better pick than the world's most famous footballer coming to your league. That's just all my wild speculation and barely connecting a couple of possible dots. But the word on the street is it's maybe not as hot of a product as Apple had initially hoped it would be at its takeoff.
I mean, you make a good point that if he's a good protagonist for a streaming service. If you were looking to bring in a name draw, I guess yes, Apple probably does have some.
I mean, if he can make Qatar look good, then selling MLS season pass should just be easy street for him.
Oh man, yeah, because the idea of a Middle East team picking him up was in discussion, but he is also, in addition to that, he was employed in some way as an ambassador for Qatar, was he not?
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I was going to say also to your point about streaming services, I'm sure that's what TSN was thinking when it bought the rights to La Liga. They were getting Messi and Ronaldo, neither of whom play in that league anymore.
Yeah.
They still get Real Madrid and Barcelona are still very valuable TV rights, but I'm sure there are some TV rights discussions that are personality based.
Yeah.
As much as anything. I have had lots of thoughts about this. Lots of feelings since it has happened. I feel that a lot of simultaneously, I think that a lot of big name signings that come to MLS don't always pan out in the way that the teams hope that they will. But at the same time, this is not just any player. This is one of the greatest players in the sports history. And even though I would say if you were comparing him to this to Beckham, Beckham was way closer to the end of his career when he joined MLS than Messi is now. Beckham was way more washed.
Yeah.
Or at least in cause he was like, Like, Messi is still, you know, appearing regularly, or was appearing regularly for a Champions League club, whereas, like, Beckham was already on, like, I'm going to get signed to AC Milan in a deal that will only basically, the only economic sense of it is so that we can sell David Beckham AC Milan jerseys. Like, that was...
Yeah, yeah. This isn't a Andrea Pirlo type signing, is what you're saying.
No. And so there's elements of that that can be really legitimately exciting. The aspect of it being Miami, a club that has had issues with like financial sanctions for breaking designated player rules. They're talking about signing Messi, former Barcelona defender Sergio Busquets, and like five other people, and it's just like, oh, what a punishment. What a punishment this is.
Yeah. Yeah.
For breaking the rules that you get Lionel Messi as a co-owner.
Yeah, it's true. It was interesting. I was watching one of the new Apple shows. I was just sort of checking it out as this news broke. And Sasha Kljestan actually made the point that, like, Inter Miami could still fail to make the playoffs. And he kind of got, like, all the other hosts were just like, you're insane. Like, what are you talking about? Like, if Messi comes to Inter Miami, of course they're making the playoffs. But I feel like we're, you know, possibly overlooking, like, the MLS-iness of this whole thing. In that, you know, I'm assuming he's going to come fit. He's obviously, as you say, like, he's still relatively in his prime. And Messi's decline out of prime is still... you know, 10 times better than the next best player. However, as we saw with Ibrahimovic to LA Galaxy, you can have a player come on and immediately make an impact and score stunning goals and sell shirts and sell tickets and still fundamentally kind of suck as a team. And I just, I don't know that I necessarily agree that that's what will happen, but I just credit Sasha Kljestan for sort of saying it. Because I don't think it's actually that remote of a possibility, at least for this season. You know, and to your point as well, like, it'll be interesting to see how this team, if they do bring in more big pieces, like, how they'll have to reconfigure their lineup to fit around that. I mean, it seemingly seems like they have, you know, five or six players that are essentially DPs. We've seen teams like LAFC obviously be very smart with their money and their contracts so that they can bring in really high profile players without making them DPs. But it will be interesting to see how it all fits together. I think part of the thing that's putting some of my excitement on ice is that I don't have a lot of faith that Messi's going to be playing on BC Place's turf anytime soon, regardless of what happens and what may come to pass. It just feels like that's not a flight you're maybe putting Messi on, and he's staying down in Fort Lauderdale to work on his tan, you know?
Well, everyone's going to have those questions about, you know, the various quirks of MLS life and how he will adjust to it. The Athletic reported that Inter Miami are looking at their charter flight situation for the rest of the year because they're using charters, but like normal planes. In
yeah.
charters, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
they're
yeah.
like they're like reevaluating everything. I don't expect Inter Miami to make playoffs because since Beckham since like the Beckham experiment, as the Grant Wall book is titled, shows, and I think that we've gotten so many pieces of evidence about this over and over. Joining the league in July is not necessarily a recipe for success. Immediately, not to say that Messi's tenure might end without a trophy. I mean, I think if Ibrahimovic had stuck around, he probably could have won something, and he
sure.
didn't. He's now retired, but like, you bringing him up is actually. I was thinking that we had two other recent examples of. A major star player brought in Gonzalo Higuain and Lorenzo Insigne, brought in with sort of an associated player like Fernando Bernardeschi or Blaise Matuidi, who, again, we can't stress this enough, Inter Miami should not have been able to sign for, under MLS rules, that ultimately became, I think, like bigger successes for the team. I think that whether you could rate Higuain as a success or a failure, he did score goals. It's not that nothing has happened. And Insigne's, you know, the book on Insigne at TFC has not been written by any stretch of the imagination. You do kind of wonder, you know, with the idea that you're bringing in Messi and you're bringing in a Busquets. Oh, could this be, is Busquets the new Bernardeschi in terms of somebody who comes in and is more successful? But then again, Messi is, you know, even Ibrahimovic was not, or had been more successful than those other two stars that I mentioned, and Messi is eclipses all three of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously it'll have a big impact. I think the East is getting a bit tight, especially in the sort of 7th, 8th, 9th places. I look at the teams above the playoff line, and it's, I can see Orlando, DC, and Montreal dropping some points, maybe Atlanta too, but I think those top five are Cincinnati, Nashville, New England, Philadelphia, Columbus. I just have a hard time believing that any of those teams are going to slide so much that they'd really be that hard or that easy to dethrone, which doesn't leave a lot of spaces left for teams below the playoff line to make it in the East, and Miami's dead last. So, of course, possible, always possible, but not so sure how that will go.
And none of that applies to next year. Like, next year could be totally different. They could have, they're talking about bringing in Tata Martino as a coach. They could have an amazing preseason. They could be, as early as next year, they could be the team to watch. But, you know, you, a soccer team, you just can't turn the ship around quite so immediately. Nations League is, or sorry, the League's Cup is going to play a role in that, in halting everybody's momentum. I was joking when I said this, but my scenario that I laid out on Twitter when Inter Miami did roll out a video of everybody's tweet reactions and was smugly reacting to having secured this player, was like, just looking forward to in September when Caden Braden-Graden sinks a stoppage time equalizer to secure a 1-1 draw that makes Inter Miami miss the playoffs in September. So that's the specific. If a young MLS player scores to create a 1-1 draw, eliminating Miami from the playoffs in September, you heard it here first.
There we go. The money's down. A few other names that I think are maybe not as familiar, but no less important to talk about. A few shifts going on around the league. Christian Arango is back in MLS, player that I really loved seeing at LAFC. I was sad to see him leave the league. RSL have picked him up from Pachuca. Obviously, ooh, RSL's been struggling with their attacking pieces, so I think on our theme of maybe not making, I don't know, I think if anybody could make an immediate impact, he's obviously very familiar with the league. RSL's a very different team to LAFC, but they have struggled to score goals. They're currently sitting in 7th place in the West, so they've been all right. I feel like Arango's a very promising signing for them.
I would say if I could make a point on that.
Yeah.
I was going to say that I think that maybe I'm like slightly, I don't know if this is like overhyped for Arango, but what immediately pops to mind is the Luciano Acosta signing in Cincinnati. You know, RSL are, I don't think RSL are as down bad as Cincinnati was when Acosta joined, but that was sort of one where it's like, really? Acosta's in Cincinnati, and eventually the quality caught up to the point where, you know, he stuck it out. The team is great now, and he is a great piece of a now great team.
He's better as well as a result.
That's right. So it's one of those situations where Sometimes you look at a player and you don't, they don't necessarily have to move to one of the teams, the league's big teams to start having a big impact again, because Cincinnati is first in the East. And I'm not necessarily, there's a lot of pieces that have to go with that for Salt Lake to, but like there, we have seen some recent success from our club to make an aspirational signing. And then even if in, you know, year one of that signing, maybe it's not, everything is not in place to make the team a top contender, but it's certainly something that where you could
but a contender,
a contender. And again, we're this is all talking like, you know, even though it's been a little tough for them, it's almost like it's talking like RSL is at the bottom of the conference, and they're not. They're in a playoff spot, so
yeah,
it's like
they're sitting in seventh, and I think they've had some recent not so great performances, but it's totally. If there's a team I'd feel more comfortable than putting my money on than Inter Miami making the playoffs, I feel like I'm fairly confident RSL will be able to at least secure a playoff spot, especially with Arango coming in.
LA Galaxy is not in the playoffs. We could do that little dance again.
Yeah, well, and maybe since we're talking about LA Galaxy, the news came out that Chicharito tore his ASL in U.S. Open Cup.
ACL?
Yeah.
That's awful. That sucks.
That's very bad. I feel bad for him. I feel like he's really shown up as a leader for this team and really tried to push Galaxy forward. I think at the same time, it sucks to admit it, but he's not been great on the field for them. And, you know, with Jovalik fighting for minutes and seeming to be able to walk the walk, at least when he's coming on as a sub, I think opens an interesting possibility for Galaxy. But Greg Vanney just can't catch a break right now with them. And then on that note, too, this one happened a while ago, but Chris Mueller is out for Chicago Fire. He's also out for the rest of the season. He had a hip procedure of some sort, but will be out until next year. So two big players, and two teams that are struggling mightily to get results, missing two really key pieces for the better part of the season. Well, the rest of the season, at least. Not so good.
Again, just part of the discussion that's worth having about the fixture congestion in this year with a Winter World Cup and players jumping back and forth between the leagues and the league's cup and everything is just you were looking at some impacts.
Yeah.
They had the MLSPA director Bob Foose saying to Jeff Reuter of The Athletic recently. And again, I was also going to be like, oh, he tore in the U.S. Open Cup. Is this part of an issue? Foose was talking about like some of the issues, maybe with the level of sending people down. I'm like, oh, did Chicharito, you know, tear his ACL in some random lower division stadium? No, that was away to RSL. So yeah. Cancel that.
Yeah. two other just quick ones, transfer news-wise. Scott Arfield, our Canadian friend, is rumored to be coming to Charlotte FC. I thought folks might be interested in that one, since we'll have a bit of Canadian flavor today.
That'll be fun.
And New England have decided to move on from Jozy Altidore. He is now a free agent. They bought him out. My question to you is, do you think there's a landing spot for him in MLS, or is it time for Jozy to hang him up?
It's tough. I mean, there is all sorts of questions that come with that you know, that go to points of like, is this player, like what does this person want to do? Where it's like, I would say that I have not seen a lot of impact. I can't think of the last time that I heard his name mentioned in connection to New England. And certainly the discussion that I've heard with him is what's going to happen with Toronto. Is Toronto going to try and get him? Do they have room for him? And I've heard people say this team does not have any more room for, you know, injury-prone aging forwards. Oh, also, by the way, no Josie Altidore page on MLSsoccer.com. They've already deleted it.
Oh, wow. It's been scrubbed.
They move fast.
They do.
You know, which is almost like wild to think about. He's a free agent to sign elsewhere, domestically, or abroad. So
this is a totally pointless tangent, but when I was looking earlier to see who all of Messi's new teammates would be at Inter Miami, if you haven't gone to look at the roster page on Inter Miami's website, there are some like steamy like pin-up pictures of every player. It's like every other team in the league just has like a tiny little like cropped thumbnail image of the player and then like the position they play and stuff. And Inter Miami just has like full page splashes of all the players looking sort of dreamily at the camera.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Pink lighting. And I'm like, it's just, it's a thing to behold. I was not expecting it. I forgot for a while what I came there for.
This is not exactly the level of that famous U.S. men's national team photo shoot, but it's pretty close. I wanted to know, I definitely, my first thought is I was wondering if any of these players are thirsty and maybe want to have a little sip out of a water fountain, perhaps. Do you know which one? Do you know what photo of all of these in this is, you're going to need to take a, if you're listening to this, you're going to need to take a trip over to intermiamicf.com/club/roster to get a look at this. DeAndre Yedlin's picture being front and center, I think is the big one. And he's sort of like leaning forward and looking pensively. Into the
He's owning that prime real estate on that page. He knew what the assignment was. Last bit of news before we get into Nations, or not Nations League, Leagues Cup. What is it? Whatever that thing was.
Nations League's CONCACAF Cup. It's the cup. That's another one.
CONCACAF Nations League of Cups. Yes. Champions League, back to that old thing. LAFC fell to Lyon. I know that's kind of old news, but I felt like it's worth mentioning that that thing happened. LAFC did not continue the trend of MLS teams winning Champions League, and by trend I mean that time. So that's that done. And
here's
LAFC
have
not been doing too well since.
I kind of wondered that. Like, we have had, we had seen, I guess if we're going to talk about Nations League, maybe I should wait to talk about LAFC. But I was going to say, you know, Seattle had a hangover last year from winning it. Is it worse to lose it, to get there and to have a bad time? It's tough to say.
I think it's always worse to lose it. I don't think they got any major injuries, but I know Buonga's been out for national team duty, and I think that they're missing a couple of other players too. So I think that also has not helped. But since we are going to be talking about the Canadian MLS teams, since we've been a bit since we've done a show, before we do that, it makes sense to just kind of talk about Canada, Team Canada.
That's right.
And this old League's Cup that happened, that came and went.
So I would say that the, as you might have heard of, there is the continuing issue with Canada Soccer not having any money, and this was referred to, I guess, in the aftermath of what I would say was a challenging Nations League final for Canada against the United States. Pretty conclusively handled by the United States. There might have been a thought process because the U.S. had another extremely tumultuous, extremely outrageous match against Mexico that involved.
Oh, would you call 9 yellow cards and 4 red cards tumultuous?
Weston McKennie's shirt being torn off, the homophobic chant once again. The game actually being canceled. That was the thing that I never got, is that they called the game off before, I believe before the 90th minute, and then just said, Well, we basically finished it, so it doesn't count as abandoned.
Sure.
And you might have seen, you might have looked at that and said, okay, well, the Canada has benefited from before from the United States being in disarray.
We just talking missing, soccer?
Well, Canada men's national team has benefited from some disarray. They're missing in past matches. They're missing Serginio Dest. They're missing Weston McKennie. Maybe this is going to be the opportunity. Well, they also have a lot of other quality players is also the problem.
Turns out. that depth. Shit.
They had a lot of depth. They had the two great goals in the first half. Belogan on 34. That was a good strike. They had a goal from the center back. Chris Richards. So they performed great. And I think that this is also John Herdman got on the mic afterwards and said, there's not enough, you know, talked about the fact that the Americans had a 10-day camp and Canada had a 4-day camp. I think that maybe there is an issue and this is going to be big for Canada coming up as all of this is being trying to be handled. You can only coast so long on this idea of like grit and of, you know, the team banding together and stuff like that. If you don't put resources into it, I think this, but on one hand, this was an opportunity. You could kind of maybe look that of it, of there being new manager bump kind of, although, you know, reappointed Greg Berhalter was not the manager in this game. You could maybe like look at some of that as uniting the states, but ultimately, like, you can't. Canada's weird situation has been predicated on the idea that for both national teams that you can just count on it working because we all really want it to work. And you don't always get those results if you don't put those resources into it. They did do that last year, and then they went fucking broke.
Yeah.
And so it's like, on one hand, I kind of like, I empathize with Herdman. And on the other hand, his team has a match next week and the women's team has a fucking World Cup coming up and doesn't have any matches. So
yeah.
What do you do? It's an issue that affects both national teams. One disproportionately, I would say, but like, This is a continuing part of what the new leadership team at Canada Soccer will have to deal with. And I just don't think, as good as these players are, I don't think that is an issue that's going to solve itself.
No. And I mean, there's lots of reasons why it can happen. But I think that the final against the States also just showed a team that looked like stretched thin and they'd sort of forgotten how to play. Like, it was just poor touches all over the pitch, and yeah, maybe having more build-up time and preparation for it would have helped, but yeah, it just feels like another really squandered opportunity to sort of move into the next step. And is it like you say, everybody keeps sort of talking about the next step, but it's not been laid out and made clear what is that next step, what are the resources that help you get to that next step, and just setting loftier goals and, as you say, relying on something that's carried you through this far. Look, I want to see Atakube bomb down the wing and lash in a goal as much as the next person, but if it's only going to come once a tournament is should be expected, then you need other things to rely on and more preparation. So it was unfortunate, although I have to say, like, given the tenor of some of the other matches, I felt like Canada came out of a gritty Panama game quite well. So there was like, there's bright points to it. Our kits looked like training kits, so we've obviously saved some money there on not actually dressing the players properly.
I will also say that at the end of it, it is also still only the Nations League. Gold Cup starts next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can.
And the Nations League is as important as you make it. Eltree, like, you know, from.
That's true.
Top to tail, that whole. The culture, the club, the everything is just. It's very bad. Very, very bad. So, considering some of our neighbors in CONCACAF, yeah, it could be better. It could be a lot better. It could be a USA type better, but something to build on.
We said last year that the Nations League was not really that important, but for the fact that the US and Mexico made it important and in the way that they contested the final. And that was true of the semifinal again this year, and without Canada presenting much of an argument, I think that if they go out and have a good Gold Cup and turn some heads in that way, then I'm sure that all will be forgotten.
Yeah. Tis true. Well, with that, we turn to the Canadian MLS clubs, and maybe it makes sense to start with the Canadian Championship involving two of those Canadian MLS clubs.
Let me set this up this way. Let me set this up this way with Vancouver. I need to do this way because you were at Vancouver Sporting Kansas City.
Yes.
This was part of the discussion that had happened involving Vancouver was around the fact that Vancouver had not been awarded a single penalty kick throughout, or they had one penalty kick, and Vanni Sartini went out and he cussed out the referees. He got fined for cussing out the referees, and then this match happens against Sporting Kansas City. There's some disallowed stuff in the first half, and he looks like he is gonna pop a vein. You were at this match. What was your recollection of this man's demeanor?
I was close enough to hear the swears from Peter Vermees' mouth directly, which means I was close enough to see Vanni Sartini just hounding the fourth official, looking like he was going to tear his own shirt off for a while, getting the fans riled up in some cases. It was popping off for Vanny at times. I've seen him pretty animated, but that was about as frustrated and angry as I've seen. Definitely as the game went on, I think he might have received a yellow card at some point, or at least a warning. He definitely kind of got himself under control. And that was an interesting one because Gould got a pretty fortuitous penalty in the 88th minute, which he scored, which salvaged a point out of a Sporting Kansas City side that seemingly with this game decided they remembered how to play soccer and grind out results, because they've been on not quite a tear, but they've certainly been doing a lot better than they had been doing.
To me, the turnaround from where things were going with the Whitecaps is that the penalty award with Diver. Diver Caicedo is fouled. People are again, their stacks are being blown because they think it's going to happen yet again. And then it's awarded. It's scored. It's 1-1. The fact that because it's so late, the fact that it's a draw doesn't particularly matter. Then they go to the Canadian Championship with some positive momentum.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I was going to transition to that. But what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to also transition to it. I think we just got our messages crossed there. Yeah, I feel bad now, sort of, because I was offered a ticket to the Canadian Championship final, and honestly, superstition got in my way. So it's like, if I go, we're not going to win. I'm just going to watch it at home. So you're welcome, everybody. I did my part. Do your part.
This game was, as I described it on Twitter, sicko shit. I thought that the real story of this game is that both goalkeepers played out of their minds. Good, Jonathan.
Yeah,
Vancouver. Vancouver Whitecaps legend.
Yeah, Sirwa in that first half, man. He just He made like 5 or 6 highlight reel saves. Just unbelievable.
So you have this look where it's like, you know, obviously they didn't take it, but it's like, and it wasn't, you know, it ended up being 2-1, but like, you know, so the team is down 2-2, and you're thinking like, well, this is still like, it's the greatest 2-0 at the time of that second goal. It's like, it's the greatest 2-0 goalkeeper performance that you can imagine.
Yeah.
Despite the flaws, and Montreal did come back and get a goal, but that was, I would say that the tenor of that whole game was, Vancouver coming in with a lot of confidence and playing with confidence and playing like it was their game, and that the other team had to do something to take it. I felt that Levante Johnson, who was signed on the emergency deal or the temporary deal, was great in the first half.
Yep.
I also really liked one of the things that maybe you don't always see from Vancouver teams over the years, is pushing during that time period after, you know, Montreal scores in, I want to say the 83rd minute or something.
Yeah.
We can see momentum change. You know, there have been so much positive, you know, vibes from Vancouver up to that point that for a second you can worry like, oh, is this really going to deflate them? And not only were they able to, you know, prevent that, like that futility inducing goal, that would have created a 2-2 situation. I felt they did a lot of great defending by attacking in that last 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah. Where, yeah, it's true.
Pushing up the pitch.
Yeah. I mean, I think Montreal had a couple of other good chances. I mean, the last play of the game is a pretty crucial save from Takaoka. I don't think it's that good of a shot, but it's just the nerves of it, especially if you're a Whitecaps fan and you're used to just last-minute blunders. It was nice to see a goalkeeper looking calm and focused and making that final save. But, yeah, I mean, we're talking about Vancouver, and I don't want to move away from that just yet. But I feel like what I noticed from this match from the Montreal side was that Losada and his side looked really disappointed. I think it's totally fair that, you know, the three Canadian MLS clubs, Vancouver's the best. I think they're the best Canadian professional team right now. And they obviously showed that in this performance that they deserve to win. But the disappointment from Losada and his players also, and their ability to get a goal back, also to me kind of signaled, I think, possibly a pivotal moment for them. Because he's got them playing pretty good football. They're getting That's players true. Like Ibrahim involved now. He's great. You're seeing things starting to work. And for a team that we kind of wrote off just because of the huge number of changes they've had. I mean, they're ninth in the East, so they're occupying that last playoff spot. But things are not totally broken. You know, it's taken them time to find their thing. I don't think they're going to be, you know, lights out the best in the East now because after losing a final. But I think that it's still a performance they can be proud of and that they can build on. But as you say, I think the big takeaway for Vancouver is just being able to put on a professional performance and get the result. Put another trophy in the trophy case. Use that as a catalyst to continue on this season. And we saw that with the league game that they followed up this performance with was against Cincinnati. So going immediately after winning a cup to playing the best team in the East by, quite a bit. Cincinnati's been on a hell of a tear. Going down a goal in the 82nd minute from just, you know, a great goal from Acosta. Yeah, Takaoka's caught out a little bit, but Acosta's proven he can score goals like that against anyone. And then it's actually Cincinnati's mistake by conceding a penalty. Cordova gets shoved down in the box late in the game, and Gould takes and scores another penalty. But, like, it's not quite all there for me for Vancouver. There's obviously still, I think, at least for me, a bit of a worry that this is their ceiling. Like, they've been performing well and grinding out results and getting results against good teams, but they're still sitting eighth in the league. They've slid down a few spots. So it's been good. But you look at Dallas, you look at Houston, you look at RSL sitting above them, and I go, but it's not yet better than those three teams. And so I think my question, or maybe my worry, is, okay, yeah, we crushed Houston 6-2. We've gotten some really good results against good teams, but we do need to continue to climb up the table if we want to ensure, you know, we make it into the playoffs with a shout. And when you've got Portland, Kansas City, not Minnesota, but at least Kansas City and Portland, like, starting to click as well. You know, there's maybe Austin, LA, Colorado, you don't need to worry about so much as coming for those playoff spots. But Vancouver needs to continue the good trend and win more league games as well.
I think that
tough
right
opponents
now,
and they've had some good performances, but that for me is the, like, it can't slide from here. It's got to go up.
When you look at where things were at, 2 years ago when they had that, when Sartini was first hired and they had that amazing lights out run, I think that they're playing overall, like, smarter, better structurally football. But what they had that they don't necessarily have right now is that Ryan Gould is doing well. Brian White is doing well. But they had absolutely white hot connection between those two players. And it doesn't necessarily have to, I'm not saying both of them have to get white hot again. There could be, you know, Simon Betcher could be in that position. I think that rather than, I would probably assume that once the transfer window opens on July 5th, that there will not be a focus, I think, on getting a replacement, because I think the club wants to make something of Sergio Cordova. But, yeah. And I, that's not based on any inside information. That's just from what I,
it's
what
a lot
I
of,
see.
It's a, yeah, it's a lot of money to spend on a player to not want to make the full season experiment work. But it's just interesting looking at RSL in seventh place, just bringing in Christian Arango, Vancouver underneath them, having brought in former RSL man, Sergio Cordova, who's, you know, he won the penalty, against Cincinnati, he definitely seems to fit in a little bit more, but that is a big question mark. That's a really big salary piece that just has not performed at all. And if he continues to not, it doesn't mean that, you know, as you say, Vancouver has other offensive pieces that they can bring in to help. But that feels like a big weight to be carrying that's not helping your position any. So that's another question mark for me is, do you ride out the Cordova train right to the end of the line, or do you maybe make something happen this summer? Not necessarily saying you get rid of Cordova, but can you bring in somebody who's going to have a more immediate impact and fits the team a little better, so that you can afford to have Cordova maybe sitting on the bench more this season? Again, he's improved, and I don't hate it, but he just does not look entirely comfortable out there, and I don't really see what the dynamic is that he's bringing that makes us better. I haven't seen a flash of that yet. He's had a couple of chances, but overall I'm kind of like, I'm pretty lukewarm on that signing right now.
To me, that's what the issue of ceiling is about to me, where it's like, does this club have a ceiling? Well, I mean, like, they're currently with the Vancouver Whitecaps, consistency has never been, you know, a strong suit. It has rarely been a strong suit. So I'm willing to be pretty happy about consistency, but at the same time, if you are looking at, like, how can, you know, Vanni Sartini in his post-match interview of the Canadian Championship was trying to get people to think seriously about the Whitecaps doing something in the playoffs, and that relies on a slightly higher tier of offensive production than what's happening right now. And I don't think that the players are incapable of it. We have seen it from White and Gault. We have seen it from Cordova at a different club. You know, anything that Boettcher can contribute is a bonus. We've been seeing some success for Julian Gressel. It's not impossible. It's no. Just a matter of it all coming together. And those five players that I mentioned and other players in the team making each other better.
Yeah. And another, I know people have talked, and we've talked a bit about like Vancouver's expected goals and sort of like, it's all been there. It just hasn't quite clicked. And now it has been clicking. But again, it's been clicking for the other teams in the West as well. And this is always the issue, is you get hot, but so have your opponents who have also figured things out. I mean, many senses it is starting to work for Vancouver. And when you take a deeper look at some of their numbers, it, I think, maybe becomes a little bit more apparent where, you know, they're second in the league for goals, or second in the West for goals. St. Louis has 34, Vancouver has 27. Goals against, were sixth best in the West. So, like, that you know, you're scoring more goals than you're letting in. That's always good. The away results have been really bad.
That's right.
We've been able to get some draws, but no road wins as of yet. And so if we're looking for a more obvious thing to go with, regardless of the personnel, it's Vancouver needs to be picking up road wins in the West to really be convincingly into the playoffs. And I just, you know, memories of past seasons where you're just so close and yet you're having to get the abacus out on the final match day to see if we'll make it in based on other results. We don't want to be in that position. We're playing too well to have our fate taken away by fortuitous mid-season signings from our rivals, you know? Like, it's, we need to be in the driver's seat from here. And I, for me, like, we should be in fourth or fifth spot. I'm fine with finishing under Seattle and LAFC, but I think if all of those things are going to align and we're going to see the Vancouver that Sartini believes is there and on paper is there, I think that they need to be in that fourth or fifth spot to really show the fruits of their labor. So we shall see.
We talked a little bit about Montreal already, but they had come into that that Canadian Championship game after getting beat pretty good by Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But they came out of it with a pretty resounding win against Minnesota.
Yeah. So, and that's again where I'm like, is this maybe a bit of a moment for Montreal? I mean, it's certainly not for Minnesota. I'm making no Minnesota predictions this year. They've been bad. And it's actually former Minnesota man Mason Toy who gets a brace in this one to help finish off his old club. But, you know, Losada Ball is starting to maybe make sense here. They're ninth in the East. So again, they've got that final playoff, the final playoff spot in the East for the moment. I think they're obvious challengers in Charlotte and New York City, maybe the Red Bulls, maybe TFC. They'll need to keep performing, but I don't know. Considering where we were like a month or so ago with Montreal, I got to say I'm feeling a lot more optimistic about their chances now than I was at any other point this season.
They also have the pieces, right? So it really comes down to whether or not they come together. And the Losada signing was a concern because you had him not had the biggest success in other in his past assignment in DC, but things have been, I'm engaging in some cautious optimism as a result of that. as a result of what we've seen so far. They've got players that can score. They got players that can score and be real fun. We have had some really wild results involving Charlotte. We had the match against Columbus where they had three goals in the space of in the space of 3 minutes. It was it was 3-0, and then all of a sudden it was 4-2.
Yeah.
Which that was wild. With you know that eventually Columbus came out on the winning end of that, but then in the next match week you had the Charlotte at home hosting Seattle, and that was a wild 3-3 draw with a 89th minute equalizer.
Yeah, Charlotte gives me kind of like 2021-2022 RSL vibes of just like you're not ever quite sure which team you're going to get. But at some point, they're going to come alive and do some damage. They may still lose, but they're going to make you work really hard for that win and make you seriously question your ability to have a 3-0 lead and see out a game.
You had Raul Ruiz Diaz scoring a picture-perfect, beautiful goal from outside the box. And then Charlotte's Westwood scoring Ashley Westwood scoring an almost identical goal from the same kind of position a little less than 20 minutes later.
Yeah. It's they're an interesting one for sure. Do we want to move to Toronto?
Let's talk Toronto. I was looking at the that's true, our favorite Canadian team, Charlotte. That's not
but I mean I think it's a really important what's the word I'm looking for? Like a story to kind of watch, because I think it does matter to Montreal in particular because they're tied for points and Charlotte's sitting just below them in the playoff race. So I feel like that is kind of one to watch, especially if Montreal's got to play them towards the tail end of the season.
So to me, what has been happening with Toronto, and it also involves Minnesota, is that we're starting to see we're finally starting to see some good influence of Insigne in the in terms of goal scoring. The goal to both of these matches, Minnesota is a 1-1 draw away. Nashville is a 1-1 draw at home. Magic goal against Nashville. That was amazing.
I think I missed that one.
Run sort of is outside the box and just sort of does a cuts into the middle without going into the box and is able to, by doing so, create some space for himself to smash a ball into the top corner. In both games, we have a big spectacular in Minnesota. You have a big spectacular save by Sean Johnson, but Kervin Aliaga scores to tie on the 89th minute. And then against Nashville, you have this miracle clearance off the line for Toronto. And then immediately the ball is sent back in and it disappointingly pops in off of Sean Johnson's hands. You just, it's described as a howler. Sometimes you just think, how can you control what your hands do sometimes in that situation? But that was on the 69th minute with Randall Leal. And that was, so I'm sure that like simultaneously, this is better from Toronto. Both of those are draws, not losses. Both of them have goals from Insigne, a player that needs to produce.
Yeah.
And Nashville went and absolutely tore it up the next week after in our last weekend of games here. But it is progress, not where they need to be.
It's true. And I mean, I think for me, looking at most of the last of Toronto's results, the thing that stands out to me is the low score lines. You got 1-1s, you got nil-nils, you got a 2-1 over DC, beaten by Austin 1-0, 0-0 at the Red Bulls. It's not been terrible. Like, they haven't been getting the stuffing kicked out of them, but it's hardly been convincing football either. They've obviously, the biggest problem is that they've struggled to score goals. Defensively, they've only conceded 21. I think that's sixth best in the East. So it's not terrible. But for a team that's sitting in 13th place, the sort of obvious point is like, well, you got to be scoring goals. You have to be turning some of these draws into wins, not to overstate the obvious. However, given, you know, just about a month ago, Bernadeschi was sounding off about something's got to change, and then he clarified it's not the players that need to change, which really only kind of leaves one thing. You know, Bob Bradley ended up yanking him from the lineup for a week, saying the comments are out of line. And I was sort of thinking, like, oh, is this how this is going to go? Because if it's a showdown between Bernadeschi and Bob Bradley, I think Bernadeschi's going to be the one keeping his job. But it's not been too bad. I mean, it's not been great. And I would say, you know, the nil-nil result against Chicago, the 1-1 result with Minnesota. What was the score in the Nashville one?
The Nashville was 1-1.
Right. I mean, that's a good result against a good team. So, yeah, the 13th, I'm not thinking, I don't see anything about Toronto's performances right now that makes me be like, oh, yeah, they're going to go on a late tear. But as players come back and get healthy, and if they can win a few of these games, you know, they are only 3 points off of a playoff spot at the moment. We've seen teams like Orlando and DC and even Atlanta United still struggling. So it's there. I mean, I don't know that Toronto is going to be the team to take that spot, but I do think that there's maybe an opportunity exists for Toronto, and it will be really interesting to see if Bob Bradley can get it done with them. And it's been coming from interesting places. You know, the win against DC, that's a great Kara goal that comes in. So it's starting to see some of these high-profile pieces fit with some of the younger pieces and seeing that actually develop results could bode well. But I think it's still, you know, you look at Toronto and it looks like it's got, you know, two really flashy Corvettes out there zooming around that can do great things. But as we've said, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win those games. You might get a highlight reel goal of the week, but you might still miss out on the big prize.
For DC versus RSL, there was DC started at a disadvantage with a defender, Birnbaum, carded for pushing over an attacker on the back while turning around. That was kind of a weird one to take as a red, but they continue to try and push. I bring this up because this goal from Pablo Ruiz, who scores from inside his own half, 60 yards yeah, away. I would also say that, like, RSL had been using a long ball style attempt two or three times before this, in terms of like trying to play in a player that then takes a shot. So you could almost even look at it was this a shot or was this an overhit pass? I'm not going to criticize it, of course, but you know,
was it a long ball or a really long ball is the question.
That's right. But RSL did great here. A performance where they had to deliver away, given this gift that they had been given in terms of the red card. great on the second goal to pin DC in on the win, the wing to get the interception and wing it in on the cross for Musovski.
Yeah. So that's a lot of soccer. That's the Canadian MLS clubs and then some. Just as we kind of wrap up here, is there any team right now in the East or the West that you're kind of feeling like you've got your eyes on, whether they're already in above that playoff line or not, but team that you're kind of watching is like a, that could cause problems for some folks or be an interesting one to watch.
Nashville continues to interest me in terms of, like, you know, they don't necessarily have monster performances every week, but Hedy Mukhtar had that that hat trick on the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it MLS continues to be kind of one of those funny leagues, right, where it's like everybody's talking about Messi, a player who hasn't even officially signed yet, and meanwhile you've got the likes of Hedy Mukhtar just scoring goals at will, picking up hat tricks. Like, who are we talking about? Like, they've, in some reports, basically Messi's already got the golden boot. Meanwhile, Hedy Mukhtar is just out there living the dream.
And not only, you know, he's doing so well with this. He creates a red card by passing it. Sorry to Jacob Schaffelberg that he has to be the magnet for a penalty. But it's like he's got the ball at his feet, and you think, well, he's got to score this. Then he takes the pass instead, which. Sometimes you would look at it as like a critique, but you know, he sort of forces the defender into that mistake. So then he scores the penalty anyway.
Yeah. He sees what we cannot see. Mukhtar. So just continues to astound.
Mukhtar, Nashville have the pieces, just like the great, set up around so that when there's a game where they're on that, like, you know, all the other fundamentals are in place. It does kind of feel that it's like not every game you get like a fully lit up performance, but there is some of that. New England continues to look great. It looks like, you know, Gustavo Bowe can do whatever he wants when he chooses to, and so I think that these were maybe not necessarily, when you look at the standings, is that true? New England are in third. So Nashville and New England are pretty high in the East. But I would say that, like, those are teams right now where it's just like, that looks like a pretty, challenging task most weeks. LAFC has had some challenging results, but still is tied for first in the conference. So the West kind of almost feels more like even the teams at the top are still figuring it out. What are the teams that you find are drawing your interest?
Yeah, I think I would agree with most of those. Certainly Nashville, and obviously for all the same Mukhtar reasons. I think a team that I've been paying a little bit more attention to recently is San Jose. And I believe they drew with Portland most recently, who has also kind of been on my radar just because, you know, we see lots of them out here. And it is a team that struggled at the beginning of their season, but is beginning to kind of click. But, you know, San Jose has certainly not been lights out great by any stretch, and they've had their San Jose moments. But they are sitting fourth in the West. They're only a point behind Seattle. I feel like we talked at the beginning of the season about, like, the teams that you don't necessarily anticipate being the teams that are going to dethrone you from playoff spots. And it does create a different picture of the West than we've had in recent years, where all of a sudden San Jose Earthquakes are taking a fourth playoff spot. Of course, there's lots of games left to be played, but it feels like San Jose would have to go on a pretty big skid given the personnel they have and the way they're playing football to all of a sudden be potentially missing out on the playoffs. It's certainly possible. It's tight in the West. But I think that the Earthquakes are in a spot that they can hold. And if they can, then again, it puts a lot of pressure on the teams below them in the West that in the past would not have to maybe worry as much. And you could make the case, well, Eaton, you also maybe don't have to worry about Austin as much, depending on what happens there. But San Jose, I don't know if I've necessarily seen a game or there's a particular player that makes me be like, oh, they're the ones to watch. But it's when you get when you get to this point in the season, you see a team that's just sitting there, staying there, not maybe moving up, but certainly not moving down either, that you're like, well, that could be a problem for some teams.
My favorite moment from the San Jose match of the weekend was when Jeremy Abobase hit the woodwork so hard that the steam pyro went off.
I didn't miss that. I was out of the room and I heard the shot come off the post. Abobase trying to get one back against his former club. Definitely, if there's a word for hardest hit shot of the season, he might have taken that one home.
The other thing I think
about, if the pyro goes off, I feel like you should get the goal.
The other thing as well, I think in terms of the playoff picture that you mentioned here is the expanded format, where it's like simultaneously it's like surprising for San Jose to be in this position, but really like there aren't, you know, the teams you get to 2 points out of the playoff, the three spots out of the playoffs right now, and you're, you know, bottom third in the conference, and it's only 3 points off of a playoff spot. So but I think that until, especially in the West, until very late, everyone will be participating.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though, you know, it's Austin, LA, Colorado down there, I mean, LA and Colorado with 13 points each, you think, okay, it's got to maybe take a couple of minor miracles to see them challenge. You know, it's also only a few wins, which is worrying if you're a Portland Timbers or Vancouver Whitecaps fan, that, you know, some bad performances from either of those clubs and some fortuitous wins for those clubs, and all of a sudden things do get close again. So that's, I think, if kind of circling back to my Whitecaps point of just like, this is not the time in the season to be hitting the ceiling. You have to be pushing for away points. You have to be, you know, having all your team clicking so that if a key player gets injured, you're not all of a sudden scrambling, because it's going to happen. It's a congested schedule. We've got a break coming up, but also it's a lot of soccer for people, and there are injuries that mount, and certain teams have been very lucky regarding injuries. And lots more to play.
I think you've got to push as hard as you can right now, in advance of that, the Leagues Cup, because I just think it's going to be completely impossible. I think we're going to look back at the end of Leagues Cup and maybe then like a month after the end of Leagues Cup and things may be like widely different than they are right now, both in terms of teams being in form or teams experiencing a hangover from going deep in that competition. But also, like, you know, we just saw Chicharito get a season injury in the U.S. Open Cup. Like, the many things could happen between the time that break starts and the time that break ends that could change the calculus significantly. So I think that right now, when you're in the form that you are at right now, you've got to get as many points as you can. Yeah. Before whatever the fuck is going to happen with this thing happens.
Yes. Alrighty. Well, until next time, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at team-bates.com, Twitter at Team Bates, Instagram at Team Batesy. While we're waiting to find out when Messi's vacation ends, where can we find you online?
Don't you mean when his vacation begins? You can find me online at MLS. That's so MLS.com. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Wherever you get your fine podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. And also on Instagram at That's So MLS. We appreciate
so much
your support. And until next time, try not to have four players sent off at once.
Don't do it.